Welcome to the ITAM Review Podcast, news, reviews and resources for ITAM, SAM and software licensing professionals.
Hello everyone, welcome to the March edition of ITAM Antics, which is our monthly news podcast where we discuss all the biggest ITAM stories that took place in pretty much the last month or pretty much since we last recorded, which is always a month away. So this month, I'm very pleased to say we have a new panelist on the panel. So AJ isn't able to join us this month. So we've got a new person to join in the conversation. So firstly, the man who needs no introduction, we have Rich Gibbons.
Hi, everyone.
And then the man who does need an introduction is Ryan Stefani, who's product manager at Elisa.
Hi, everyone. Happy to be here.
Thanks. Right, let's kick off. So I'll just as usual, a little bit of housekeeping. So main things that have happened at the ITAM review and things coming up. So firstly, I'll kick off the mentioning that obviously you probably would have seen the news announced fairly recently that the ITAM review and Elisa were both acquired by the ITAM forum very recently. Obviously, this is very fresh information, and new information on this will come in due course. Just to say, nothing immediately will change, but you'll probably start to see kind of more collaboration between the companies going forward, as and you know, this podcast being a prime example of that. For customers, I would say, of both organizations, Martin is actually organizing a webinar on the 28th of March to kind of expand on the plans for the merger, what it means as the organizations come together, and what that will look like as it progresses. This is, invites for that have already gone out. So you probably will, if you're affected, then you'll be getting an invitation for that. So just look out for that if you've had that invite. The other thing to talk about is obviously just last week we had Wisdom North America. So obviously one of our big events. Richard and Ryan were both in attendance. So I'm going to turn to you straight away to kind of give us your 2 minute kind of how did it go? What were the highlights for you? I'll turn to Rich first for this.
Oh, so yeah, I mean, as always, it was a fantastic event. We had, I think, approximately 75% of attendees were first time attendees as well. So we had, you know, some familiar faces, which was fantastic. You know, some people that have been coming 5 years. I think there are a couple of people that have been going to the conference longer than I have. But also we had people, you know, brand new to ITAM Review, brand new to ITAM. So it was fantastic to meet some of those and you know, see them networking and building their personal networks and stuff. So really, really pleased to see the new entrants into the industry. The content, the agenda, I mean, I'm slightly biased, I guess, but I think it was very strong. There's fantastic speakers from a variety of end user organizations, which is always our primary focus. So yeah, you know, we had great stuff on AI, building stakeholder engagement, building teams, CMDB, FinOps, all sorts. I sat in on as many sessions as I could, really enjoyed it, had some fantastic conversations with people. The energy was amazing, and you know, lots of people connecting with each other, helping each other. So yeah, I mean, I could go on for probably longer than the conference lasted about how good it was, but I'll kind of leave it there just to say that, yeah, very successful. You know, thank you to everyone who came, gave up the time, and yeah, just really pleased with how it went.
Fantastic. And Ryan, what did you think? Obviously, you hosted a few events, didn't you? A few sessions as well. But what was your kind of main takeaways from the event?
Yeah, like Richard, I was actually my first time there. So I was one of the first timers as well. So my first Wisdom event. So as Rich said, it was great because people are, it's varying levels and everybody's kind of helping each other along. That's the greatest thing, is like the sense of community that we kind of build with those. it's kind of nice to experience that in person, right? I kind of feel like you're on your own a lot of times as an asset manager. So it felt nice to feel other people the same problems and challenges. But I mean, common threads that I kind of heard talked about, like I said, a lot of conversation about AI, but what I kind of found as a takeaway from the conversation there, it's a lot of hype right now in IT asset management today. It's not been prioritized in a lot of organizations, but it's being discussed more and more, and you're seeing the vendors start to discuss the use cases and the kind of art of the possible with AI. The FinOps ITAM convergence was a hot topic right now, and it leads into some of the things that we've seen from FinOps Foundation. Things caught me by surprise, maybe. I don't know. It's not bad things, but containers. I really expected us to see a lot more users focus on containers and how you manage the cost and how the implications of licensing. Wasn't something that was a hot topic right now, but I think it's something we'll see the it was a buzz. It was like an under the surface conversation that kind of, oh yeah, we've talked about containers, but it's not a primary focus. And then I think the thing that excites me the most, and this is my dirty little secret always about asset management, is the momentum and movement away from software optimization and compliance as being like the sole driver for asset management was really prevalent in every conversation I had. You started to see ESG, as Rich talked about, business enablement, digital experience, security, regulatory commissions, driving asset management conversations beyond just that license compliance side of things. So I found that to be really exciting and really a positive momentum for everything in asset management and the different aspects and industries that we discussed that were there. So I thought it was great. It was great to get connected with all these different individuals and hear their challenges that they've got faced or where they're succeeding in asset management as well.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds like it was a cracking event, as always. And Rich, say 75% new attendees. That's incredible, isn't it? That shows real, the word is getting out there that wisdom is the place to be. So it's great to see. So talking of wisdom, we've got Wisdom NA just in our rearview mirror. We've now got Wisdom EMEA coming up on the horizon. So if you're in that part of the world, then June the 18th and 19th is the date for Wisdom EMEA. So that's the Tuesday and the Wednesday, I believe. And then the day before, it's become a bit of tradition to have our kind of training courses on that day. So if you want, you can really pack your...
Can I shout out about that training courses for a second? Sorry, shameless plug here, George.
Yeah, do it.
Sorry, yeah. So I really want to call us out, right? So this is talk about the synergies that you mentioned earlier. So for Lisa customers, I don't know if people know this, but you know, you have that ongoing subscription to Lisa. That includes access to Wisdom EMEA. So you want to take advantage of that. So the price of that subscription is actually includes the access to Wisdom EMEA. So and it also includes access to the licensing workshops you were mentioning on Monday the 17th, the day before, right? So, and that's an SAP focused workshop and a Microsoft focused workshop. So if you're thinking about going and you need help with, you know, licensing in those areas or want to learn more about that, it's really advantageous to check out, you know, a Lisa subscription, because then you get the ongoing on-demand and exclusive live webinar sessions, stuff that we got going over on Lisa as well. So just my shameless plug about that as well, George. Sorry to cut you off there.
No, that's great. That's great. We welcome shameless plugs here as often as as often as possible. So thank you. So let's kick off with the stories. We've got three stories this month to discuss. One about audit costs, one about cloud, and then another one about hardware asset management, so HAM. So got a nice little variety there. So the first one is based on a survey by Umitsa about poor inventory data being to blame for increased audit costs. So this was a survey, this was a North American survey, I believe, if I remember correctly, that found that roughly half of organizations have experienced a significant increase in their audit budget expenditures due to poor technology inventory data, with 56% reporting that the data accuracy of their CMDB was only 85% accurate or less, and with many companies reporting insufficient levels of process automation. Another data point from this was that 46% of organizations experienced significant audit delays due to this inaccurate data, which I imagine is not a surprise to many, many of us that have been through an audit. So obviously there's more, I'd certainly suggest you read the full article. There's lots of other data in there about the kind of knock-on effects of having poor data and data automation in ITAM. So Rich, I'll turn to you first. Obviously this is a bit of a reminder about the basics about data. Did you have any thoughts you wanted to share? Any things that come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting, but as you say, it's not surprising. But I think it's always good to get a reminder of this sort of thing. And for me, you know, it's something that we talk about quite a lot. You know, the role of an asset manager is only getting bigger. So, you know, there's all these new things, some of which we've mentioned already, you know, sustainability, SaaS, cloud, FinOps, ESG, you know, managing fonts and colours and all sorts of stuff. But also all the things that you're still doing still need to be done. So, you know, one of the hardest things, I think, for an asset management professional is balancing everything and making sure that you're still doing the foundation whilst you're building on top of it at the same time. And I do think that automation, machine learning, to some extent AI, you know, is the way forward. You can't keep doing it all manually. You know, it takes longer, you make mistakes, you miss things. So for me, this is just a kind of timely reminder that, you know, if you're talking to your leadership and you want to automate and you need budget, etc., you know, things like this you can use as a bit of leverage to say, look, you know, I need X amount to automate these things, but it will save us, you know, X times three in terms of reduced audits over the next 5 years or whatever. So I think a useful piece of information for asset managers to use in their own businesses.
Okay. And Ryan, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I'll carry on. I think with what Rich said, I don't think this comes as a real shock to me, right? So you look at the ISO standards, and trustworthy data is the bedrock of asset management, right? Like I said, it's just going to proliferate and get worse or compound with the different technologies. It's just gotten so much harder with the increased amount of, you know, technology that really enables these business transformations or digital transformations. So that, I don't think that's a major shock to me, and it's cost of managing these audits are going to get, you know, exponentially worse. And when I think about this, I look at the study, I believe it was referring towards software audits, but, you know, it could be a little bit wider audience. So when I think about this, you know, we're not just focusing on data that needs to be provided for software audits, but you could be talking about internal auditors, regulatory providers as well. So you think about, you know, PCI in the US, you know, there might be some GDPR requirements as well that you need to focus on. So, you know, the cost of those audits aren't just isolated to software compliance audits. So I think it makes sense. I mean, there was something I found kind of interesting that I looked at this, and this is something that's kind of near and dear to my heart, I guess, in conversations of an asset management, is there's the mention of CMDB data and the accuracy of that data. And, you know, I think it's lost in looking at the studies. There's this world where we're going to have perfect data, and the CMDB is the central point of truth. And I don't know if Rich has thoughts on this as well. But I start to question about the management of this data and these new models. That's where I think Amit's is interesting at times to talk about, is everybody tries to funnel everything to a CMDB in this legacy way of managing the data structure. I think that when we start talking about managing this, it needs to be, how do we push that data into a different data model with different data architecture and machine learning and AI tools out there on the market? We need to rethink our data models and our data strategy, and that idea of a CMDB covering all of our IT assets and service assets is not viable, right? We start to look at new master data management models. So you start to look at what's the critical data that needs to be centrally located, and then how do I let that other subsets of data or secondary or tertiary data sets about that critical asset data be pushed to those fringe asset management decision makers? So like when I say that, like personas like procurement, vendor management, product owners, how do we allow them to make those decisions with that master data management rather than having a single source of truth where it houses everything? That's what kind of came to mind because I saw the call at the CMDB and the focus on that data. I question if that data model even is viable. We need to rethink the data model. And I think that's why the study was interesting to me, is that it called that out to me. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Rich, or if I'm just a crazy man spouting gibberish about data models changes. But I think it opened my eyes to that, you know, people still focus on that CMDB model as a central point, and I just haven't seen it work ever. And I think it's just going to be less viable moving forward.
I mean, I completely agree with you, Ryan. And, you know, we saw it Wisdom, to be fair, you know, there was a session about ITAM and CMDB and how you get them to work together. But then I had a bunch of conversations with people where they were like, you know, the bane of my life is the CMDB. And it's making things more difficult. And there's, you know, some of it's technical, some of it's political. And then, yeah, you know, the kind of enterprise technology management conversation, you know, looking, as you say, looking at it in a different way. I do think, I guess, you know, the CMDB, if you have got a really good one and it's working, then, you know, that will be the case for some people. But I think for a lot of organizations, looking at a different way of doing things in 2024 is probably the way forward, to be fair. So yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, I'm not saying the CMDB dies. I just think, like SACM, that service asset configuration management, still has a place, but it's focused on service delivery, right? So you got to have an outcase. It's an IT asset management. It's almost two different worlds you're focused on. So you conflate the two. If you try and build them up over time, you'd like to have, you know, identical maturity, and we can understand our IT assets feed into a CMDB and vice versa, and how they connect to business services and IT services. But I think, you know, from a maturity level, you focus on, okay, am I really going to get all of my IT assets in there, and how that relates to an IT service and business service. You know, when you think about microservices architecture, I just don't know if that's viable, and expecting to have perfect data in that CMDB doesn't make sense. I'd be more focused on understanding that I utilize as a service asset, that I use containers, and then I go to the trustworthy source of what that container orchestration software is, for example, to see the subset of data that I need to understand what's happening within that container from a risk and vulnerability perspective. That's what caused an outage for my business services. And me as an IT asset manager, I do need that level of granularity of what the libraries and things are within that container. I think there's just a different way to approach this. I don't know if that's making much sense there, Rich, what I'm talking about, but this feels like we need to separate the two and understand there's a connection, but it's unlikely you're going to be at this mature level where they're going to fully meet. We need to rethink that paradigm of that we're going to have SACM and IT asset management be the same exact level of maturity throughout the process of developing the two. They're just two different disciplines that do need to work together, but I think it's probably stifling both of them in most cases.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's what I heard last week in Florida, that, you know, trying to get them both to do things in the same way or at the same level or what have you, you know, was preventing the ITAM teams from doing what they needed or wanted to do in other areas. So yeah, completely agree with you on that.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, George.
Surely this is something we should call out to the community for, if anyone's got experience of doing this, you know, like the CMDB or some, you know, different data models that they might have tried. We'd love to hear from them. So if that's you, then get in touch with us. We'd love to have a chat.
Yeah, if you love CMDBs, let us know. If you hate CMDBs, let us know. If you're somewhere in the middle, you know, yeah, that kind of thing. It'd be great to see what, you know, what the community is thinking on that. So yeah, you know, drop us an email, LinkedIn, Carrier Pigeon, you know, whatever works. But it'd be great to hear some other people's insights.
Yeah, I mean, George Rich knows this, but I'm wanting to write more articles and topics about this, because I maybe I'm shaking the trees a little bit, but I feel like the paradigm needs to be rethought around this space. And I've seen a lot of people talk about CMDB and asset management as one and the same. And I think we got to really shine a light on this and go, is this viable? Like, back to my experience when I was at Gartner, is I talked to vendor in the market about what the viability of this is. And they go, it's been done. So they put me in contact with a client. That client was a large service provider that was using it to train people on how to manage the CMDB and their asset management together. So it wasn't viable. I think they said they had 250 people working on that. I don't know about you guys, but I haven't seen a lot of ITAM teams or SACM teams of 250 people managing the data structure to have it all perfect. So that's just something I want to start calling out and figuring out, you know, maybe there's a path forward, and I'm wrong, but I want to understand, you know, maybe we rethink this and shine a new light on this with the new technologies and architectures that are out there, that we can find success in both disciplines where we can coexist and rethink the data model. So I'd be happy to start getting more input on that.
Fantastic. Well, if you've got any ideas, please reach out to us, and we'll look into this. Shall we move on to story number two? This one, I quite like this one. This is off the back of a podcast. I always like these when we do a podcast about a podcast, because it's a bit Inception, I think. So this is, can I run Oracle on Microsoft Azure? So this was a podcast with License Fortress and Bridgerton Data. So as hybrid environments become the norm within organizations, considering what you can run where is a key component of any system architecture, and obviously ITAM as well. In this episode, Rich talked to Dean Bolton from License Fortress and Tim Gorman from Bridgerton Data about the do's and don'ts of running Oracle software in the Microsoft Azure cloud, looking at it both from a licensing perspective, but also obviously the technical challenges as well of doing that. So this idea always fascinates me, Rich, because it always feels like it's like cheating in some way. It's like, how can I break the model and put my Oracle somewhere else? Where do you want to kind of summarize some of the kind of the main points from the conversation, and kind of, I guess, the benefits of running Oracle on Azure and why people would consider doing this?
Yeah, so you know, the kind of podcast came about from a couple of discussions that we'd had, and that License Fortress and Bridgerton have seen with their customers, where, you know, most organizations have got Oracle to some degree. You know, a lot of organizations are running Microsoft Azure. So there comes a point where people think, right, you know, we've got this thing. Can we move it into the cloud? You know, the question of whether, you know, it should be moved into the cloud, is it the right thing to move, etc., it wasn't really what we were covering on the podcast, because that's a whole thing on its own.
Mm.
We were more looking at, and it's not just with Oracle and Microsoft, you know, it applies to others as well, but this concept of, you know, Oracle would prefer you to put your Oracle software in the Oracle cloud. And, you know, Microsoft would prefer you to put Microsoft software in the Microsoft cloud, and so on. So we were kind of looking at, you know, when it comes to working with Oracle, what can and can't you do in terms of what's contractually allowed, what's frowned upon, what is possible but isn't technically supported, how does it impact on your agreements with Oracle? And then looking at some specific bits around like Oracle Rack and, you know, alternatives to this, that, and the other. So it's one of those things where, you know, I suppose in some ways it's quite niche, but the wider concept of what can you put where, and I guess to what extent do you take the word of the software publishers as to what you can and can't do?
Mm.
Is kind of part of it, you know, and it's really, you know, they will tell you things, but it's not all, you know, sometimes things are best practice, but it doesn't mean that you can't do something different, and so on. So it was quite an interesting conversation. And I think, yeah, the wider idea of, you know, when you're looking at what you can move, where, doing the research to really understand what you can do, what you can't do, what you could do, and then making those decisions internally as to whether it's worth it. And then, as I say, you know, the separate but related question is, should this even be going into the cloud at all? But that is that's another topic for another day, that one, I think.
Ryan, is this something you've seen organizations do in your experience, or is it still quite a niche kind of approach?
I don't think it's a niche approach to use software publishers. I mean, within different hyperscalers, right? I don't think that's uncommon. I think my concern about the whole thing is what people, I actually think it's probably happening more often than you think. I don't know if, Rich, you have different opinions on this, but what I've experienced is organizations ran to cloud, right? They lifted and shifted, right? There maybe wasn't a lot of thought process into the architecture, or engineers were so focused on innovation that they went ahead and spun up in different, you know, an Oracle database within EC2, right? And they may have run themselves out of compliance, not knowing the implications of the licensing policies. So that's my fear, I think it actually has happened, and we may not necessarily have visibility into what our risks are within those environments from that race to the cloud. And I don't think, like I said, well, the other thing I think I don't think is the problem here is people maybe see the BYL opportunity to save cost, but they don't understand the guardrails of when they should actually manage these BYL scenarios. So I think people are using this and they don't understand, they ran there, they've spun up instances where they could have got themselves non-compliant because they're in an arms race to get to the cloud, thought it was going to save them money, or they didn't understand that, hey, it's not appropriate maybe for certain use cases of moving workloads to the cloud to use these BYL scenarios. And then they've got it, it's very hard for them to manage and make it tenable to get their arms around when I should use Oracle and Azure, or I should use IBM within GCP or AWS. They don't really understand that. There's not a one-size-fits-all approach to it. And I think that's the thing that I've seen be problematic is people are doing this, but I think it's treading lightly. They're treading without understanding really the risks and implications of what could happen as the downfalls of this approach. I don't know if you have any different thoughts on that, Rich, but...
No, I mean, you know, completely agree. Like I say, the podcast isn't really looking at that side of things because, you know, that this was specifically, you know, the Oracle bit. But I completely agree with you. You know, that's why we're seeing more people coming back from the cloud because, you know, they moved stuff to the cloud exactly as it was on-prem and are then, you know, shocked face that it isn't magically cheaper. So completely agree, you know, and yeah, you know, license compliance in the cloud, I've been saying it for years, but that will be the next, you know, big audit frontier of, you know, what you've got in the cloud. So it's a real problem. There are, you know, quite a few different fronts when it comes to hybrid environments and ITAM and cloud. But yeah, you know, it's working out, you know, what should you do, you know, what makes sense for your business, and then making sure that ITAM look at, you know, what's allowed based on your contract and so on. And I think at that point it is having the ability to, you know, disagree with the publishers if needs be. And that's kind of the point where we got to on the podcast of, you know, just because Oracle say you can't do this or you shouldn't do this, it doesn't mean that you can't do this. So yeah, but you know, we'll still be talking about this in 5 years at least. Definitely a you know, one of those kind of current and future topics at the same time.
I think I just want to piggyback on something. You talk about the non-compliance. Yeah, like I know the audit practices of quote unquote slowed down, you know, where it's not so predatory. And I think that's still kind of, it'll be true, but I think the non-compliance in these cloud environments, like you said, Oracle, IBM, Microsoft all are hyperscalers. And what I think you'll find is you're going to find yourself potentially in some non-compliance areas where they're not going to necessarily try and fine you. It's going to be a way to gain market share within the cloud space, right? So you may have to do your architecture to get value out of the spend you would otherwise lost. I think that's what you're going to start to see happen. And then, like I said, you'll see different tactics change and how they bundle product offerings, right? Like Microsoft did with hybrid benefits, right? Where it's more advantageous to move content or move licensing to Azure. You're going to see more and more of that from IBM and Oracle as well, I imagine. So it's going to put yourself at more risk and find opportunities to where, you know, it's going to impact your strategy. Have that conversation. What's the business value for us to do this? Or is it better for us to necessarily abandon our perpetual licenses at times and go with the service, the cost of the licenses included at an exponentially higher rate if it's more advantageous from a business value perspective and aligns to our architectural strategy?
Indeed. All right, let's move on to the last story of the day. We've got Ham, the comeback king. So this is off the back of a webinar that AJ hosted, actually, with a panel of experts sharing their tips on how to reignite interest in hardware asset management within your organization. So during the podcast, during the webinar, sorry, we heard from Anne Watson from SHI, Clint Lang from Iron Mountain, and Michael Smith from ServiceNow. So I guess the question here is obviously, well, FinOps and AI are they're the big topics that everyone's talking about. Obviously, HAM, hardware asset management, hasn't gone anywhere. It's still there. But is it having a bit of a comeback? So I suppose So Ryan, I'll turn to you first. So is HAM the often kind of forgotten side of ITAM? Did it go anywhere?
Yeah, it feels forgotten at times, but I don't think it ever went anywhere, right? So like when I, again, back to reference of my time with Gartner, I got a lot of calls where they would call in starting with like Sam, but they're like, oh, we just didn't think anybody talked about ITAM holistically, right? They didn't think about the like, hardware and software asset management. And then, so I don't think it ever really went anywhere. And what I've seen is a bit of a resurgence, obviously post-pandemic. And then I think we've seen new drivers for this, right? So you see digital employee experience, more work remote for work employees. You want to make sure that they have a good experience with their hardware and software as well. But you know, those endpoints need to be managed effectively and make sure that they're, you know, not having high turnover rates. It's easy to get service delivery or have the devices ordered to them. So streamlining work operations and then security standards. Every security standard you look at calls out the need for hardware asset management and then sustainability. So I don't think it's went anywhere. And then I think you see more and more blurred lines between like hardware asset management and enterprise asset management. Maybe this is niche to different verticals, industry verticals, but I don't think it really went anywhere because like, but and like I said, why it's being called out more is what is a hardware asset, right? So you have manufacturing environments or oil tankers or oil rigs or whatever, and they use different controllers or laptops or, you know, edge computing devices now to help manage their IoT devices. That's going to be more critical to the delivery of business services and managing those life cycles. So it may not be about the fixed asset value. I just don't think it's anywhere. It is getting a little bit of resurgence or becoming more pronounced. So I don't think it got hidden or disappeared necessarily. It just got, people just thought it wasn't as vital and it wasn't as flashy as maybe Sam for a while. And I just think we're starting to see it bubble back up to surface for some of these topic areas. And it aligns to what you got to do for Sam anyways.
Yeah, so it's like anything, whenever there's something new and exciting, it's not the old thing's gone away. It's just being overshadowed, often temporarily, by the big trend of the day. So I mean, you mentioned hybrid working there and kind of COVID and how that's how people have obviously it's changed the environment somewhat with it, hardware assets. And Rich, does that resonate with you? Is there anything you want to add on the HAM? What's your position on HAM?
I mean, you know, I quite like it. Bit of mustard, maybe a bit of mayo.
That's lovely, isn't it?
But, you know, I mean, we saw COVID really reignited people's focus on hardware asset management. You know, we'd seen in the years leading up to 2020, you know, as Ryan said, you know, it was still there. People were still doing it, but it wasn't particularly flashy. You know, it just kind of ticked along. It did what it did. And then, you know, COVID came. All of a sudden, you've got thousands more devices that instead of having them in one office, you've got them in, you know, effectively 10,000 offices, and you need to track them and update them and patch them and return them and repair them and all that kind of thing. So we saw all of, you know, people, there were sort of two sides to it. There were the people that had been doing hardware asset management all the time that were like, yeah, told you. And then there were people that had maybe, you know, focused more on SAM, and there was a bit of a scramble to relearn some of those HAM you know, elements, but it's retained its position. You know, it didn't drop off again. We see HAM hardware in general, you know, much more prominent in the community, in the audience. You know, one thing I will say, we would love to have more HAM content at the conferences, but what we find is there aren't many end user hardware asset managers who want to speak at conferences. I know they're out there, I just haven't found them yet. So if that's you, again, get in touch for, you know, Wisdom and Mia, or the others. You know, we would love to help share some of the advances in hardware asset management. But yeah, you know, like you've both said, hybrid, whether it's in the data center or in the desktop arena. You know, hybrid is the way forward. Hardware is always going to be around. It's just as important. And in some ways, you know, is probably foundational. You know, if you're tracking software, that's going to be on some hardware or connected to some hardware or used by hardware. So, yeah, you know, it's two sides of the same coin, I guess.
Yeah, it always astonishes me when people say, I just do SAM. I go, well, how do you manage your install, move, add, change process for software? Like, I don't understand how you can not have some level of HAM for SAM. So it always astonishes me, Rich, when people say, I just do SAM. I don't know anything about HAM. I go, well, you got to know some bit of HAM. You got to be doing some of the blocking and tackling bits of this. You got to have bits and pieces of it. And then, as you talked about, like, I hear a lot of people, well, we're going to the cloud. I go, well, okay, not everything, right? You're going to have a minimum. You're going to probably have something in a hybrid environment. You're going to have some network switches and gear. And you're going to have endpoints. So that's not going to go to the cloud, right? And then maybe you have a colo, right? So, you know, how do you manage those colos? Are they actually just providing the services of managing the colo and power? Are you having to provide the hardware yourselves? Like, and then this sounds silly, but maybe this is really niche amount of vendors out there. There's still hardware asset management for those hyperscalers too. So that's always interesting to me as well. And where that data, what they do at those hyperscalers as well, or SaaS providers.
Yeah. Yes. You're thinking. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. I don't know if there's either of you got anything you want to promote that you're working on at the moment, anything that's coming up that we haven't mentioned. I haven't got anything directly that comes to mind, but Ryan, do you want to plug Lisa one more time?
I'll always plug Lisa, George. Yeah. So obviously, if you guys aren't familiar, training platform for on-demand live and sessions. And like, so obviously talked about the integration with the Wisdom conferences and the value you get there as well. So it's not a lot of places out there to get great asset management training. That's why I actually came on board, is I feel like it's a discipline where oftentimes you sink or swim. You just get thrown to the wolves, and this is an opportunity for people to get training on all these different challenges that face asset managers out in the world. So that's the idea, is to give you guys the resources to be successful in your job, and always looking for feedback on content we need to add and keep up to date as well. So just a good resource for everybody to check out.
Fantastic. And Rich, anything else you want to end on, or should we?
I mean, I just want to do another shout out for Wisdom and Mia. So, you know, last year, record breaking numbers. You know, I've asked the team to break those again. We want as many people as possible. So yeah, as Ryan says, you know, if you're a Lisa subscriber in the region, you've got the ticket. You know, get your flights booked, get your train booked. You know, get yourself down to Wembley in June. If you're not, obviously, you know, still more than welcome. If you've got any questions about what's included at the conference, how does it work, what to expect, if you need help getting it signed off, you know, by your budget holders, etc., drop us a line. You know, I'm on LinkedIn an inordinate amount of time, so you know, you'll be able to message me on there, drop me an email, whatever works. And yeah, it would be great to see you there. If you want to speak, we've got a really strong lineup already. But always looking for additional speakers. Whether you're, you know, super confident, you've done it loads of times, or if it's the first time and you're kind of thinking about maybe wanting to do a bit of public speaking, the Wisdom conferences are a great first place to start. You know, you're amongst friends. Everyone is, you know, they're there to see you succeed. So if that's interesting, again, get in touch. And yeah. See you in Wembley.
Fantastic. Lovely. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. We will see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye.